When the war began, the headmaster of Colburn had rushed off to throw himself upon the foe from the midst of the Army's education program. He stepped in front of a truck one night in the blackout, and the school mourned him as a hero. I was appointed head pro tem, without any increase in salary, as we must all shoulder our burdens without thought of self. It was taxing, thankless work, but I bent to the task and did what I could until 1947, when I had a difficult conversation with Boy, who is now a CBE for his war work and chairman of our Board of Governors.
Donnie, you've done a superb job during the whole of the war and long beyond. But it was fun, wasn't it?
No, not fun. Damned hard slogging.
Well, none of us had an easy war, Donnie. And I must say you look well on it. Question is, what are we to do now?
You're the chairman of the board. You tell me.
Well, you don't want to go on being head, do you?
That depends on the conditions. It might be much pleasanter now. I've been able to get a pretty good staff during the last 18 months, and I suppose money will be more plentiful now that the board can think about it again.
But you just said that you hated being head.
In wartime, who wouldn't? But as I say, things are improving. I might get to like it very much.
Look, old man, let's not make a long business of this. The board appreciates everything you've done. They want to give you a testimonial dinner. They want to tell you in front of the whole school how greatly indebted they are to you. But they want a younger headmaster.
How young? You know my age. I'm not quite 50 like yourself.
I know.
How young does a headmaster have to be nowadays?
It's not entirely that, Dunny. God, you're making this tough for me. You're unmarried. A headmaster needs a wife.
When I needed a wife, I found you needed her even more.
Oh, God, that's hitting below the belt. Anyhow, Leola wouldn't have... Never mind. You have no wife.
Perhaps I could find one in a hurry. Miss Gustling.
At our sister school, Bishop Cairncrosses has been giving me the glad eye in an academic way for 2 or 3 years.
Will you be serious? It's not just the wife, Dunny. We have to face it. You're queer.
The sin of Sodom, you mean? If you knew boys as I did, you wouldn't suggest anything so grotesque. If Oscar Wilde had pleaded insanity, he'd have walked out of court a free man.
No, I don't mean kids simple. I mean queer. I mean strange, funny, not like other people.
Oh, that's very interesting. How am I queer? Do you remember poor old Ironmonger, who had a silver plate in his head and used to climb the water pipes in his room and address his class from the ceiling? Now, he was queer.
Oh, for
that unfortunate alcoholic Bateson, who used to throw a wet boxing glove at inattentive boys and then retrieve it on a string. I always thought they added something to the
Johnny,
school. Surely you don't think I'm queer in any comparable way?
You're a fine teacher. Everybody knows it. You're a great scholarship getter, which is quite another thing. You have a reputation as an author. But there it is.
There is what?
It's this saint business of yours. Of course your books are splendid, but if you were a father, would you want to send your son to a school headed by a man who was an authority on saints? I mean, religion in the school is one thing, but not this misty world of wonder workers and holy wizards and juiceless women. Now, I'm an old friend, but I'm also chairman of the board, Dunny, and I tell you, it won't do.
Are you kicking me out?
Certainly not. Don't be extreme. You're a tremendous addition to the school as a master, a well-known writer on a difficult subject, translated into foreign languages, amusingly eccentric and all that, but you would be a disaster as a peacetime headmaster.
Eccentric? Me?
Yes, you. Good God, don't you think the way you rootle in your ear with your little finger delights the boys? And the way you waggle your eyebrows? Great wild things like mustaches? I don't know why you don't trim them. And those terrible Harris Tweed suits you wear and never have pressed. And that disgusting trick of blowing your nose and looking into your handkerchief as if you're expected to prophesy something from the mess? You look 10 years older than your age. The day of comic eccentrics as heads has gone. Parents nowadays want somebody more like themselves.
A headmaster created in their own image,
yes, if you wish.
Well, you obviously have somebody virtually hired, or you wouldn't be in such a rush to get rid of me. I thought so. Very well. I'll stay on
as chief of history and assistant head. I don't want your testimonial dinner, but I should like you, as chairman, to address the school and make it very clear that I have not been demoted as soon as you could get somebody their parents liked better. It'll be a lie, but I want my face saved. Say the demands of my writing made me suggest this decision, and I pledge my full support to the new man. And I want 6 months' leave of absence on full pay before I return to work.
Agreed. You're a good sport, Dunny. Where will you go for your 6 months?
I have long wanted to visit the great shrines of Latin America. I shall begin in Mexico with the shrine of the Virgin of Guadalupe.
Now, there you go, you see. You go right on with the one thing that really stood between you and a headmaster's job.
Certainly. Don't expect me to pay attention to the opinion of numbskulls like you and your board and the parents of a few hundred cretinous boys, do you?
Are you Mr. Dunstan Ramsay?
The person who was speaking to me from the stage door of the theater was probably a woman, but she was dressed like a man, had short hair, and was certainly the ugliest human creature I had ever seen. Not that she was misshapen. She was tall, straight, and obviously very strong, but she had big hands and feet, a huge jutting jaw, and a heaviness of bone over the eyes that seemed to confine them to small, very deep caverns.
Eisengrim will be very pleased to see you. He noticed you in the audience. Follow me, if you please. Are you vacationing in Mexico, Mr. Ramsay?
Actually, I'm doing research for a book I'm writing.
Of course. How did you find our performance?
From the advertisement in the morning paper. I've always had an enthusiasm for magic and illusionists, so I was unable to resist the announcement that the great Magnus Eisengrim, after triumphantly touring South America, would now astonish Mexico City.
That's not quite what I meant. I should have asked, how did you enjoy our performance?
Well, I found it quite unlike any magic entertainment I have ever seen.
How so?
Most magic acts set out to ingratiate themselves to the audience. It's all fun, and aren't we clever?
Yes?
But this performance had mystery and beauty and even a hint of terror. All the old tricks, and all beautifully done. Never once a facetious smile to be seen.
And was this to your liking?
I found it enthralling.
And Eisengrim himself?
Most dazzling illusionist I've ever seen.
How charming. Be sure to mention that to Eisengrim, won't you? He does so love to be told.
Ah,
Magnus.
Lisa, je me dois d'avoir plus de lumière rouge dans mon dernier tableau.
Not now. Mr. Dunstan Ramsay, your old friend, Magnus Eisengrim, and the beautiful Faustina.
Mr. Ramsay, how do you do? Please forgive my lack of clothing.
Beauty need not be forgiven, mademoiselle. A pleasure.
Mr. Ramsay, you are wicked and charming.
It has been a long time, Mr. Dunstable Ramsay.
It has been over 30 years, Mr. Paul Dempster. Unless you count our meeting in Switzerland when you called yourself Faustus Legrand.
Ah, yes. Early days for me. I left the circus shortly before the war. But this evening, did you recognize me at once?
The moment you set foot on stage. Don't forget, I have a special interest.
Ah, yes. You know, Liesel, that Mr. Ramsay was my very first teacher in magic.
How delightful. We very much hope that you can lunch with us tomorrow.
Liesel, es-tu certaine ce que tu fais?
Yes, I am perfectly sure, and so are you.
Ce serait tout à fait mon plaisir, if I am not an intruder.
No, no. How can so old a friend possibly be an intruder? You see what we are doing, Ramsay. We are building up a magic show of unique quality, and we want it to be in the best possible condition before we set out on a world tour. It is rough, still.
No, on the contrary. I thought it highly polished.
Oh, very kind of you to say so, but it is rough in comparison with what we want to make it. We want the utmost accomplishment combined with the sort of charm and romantic flourish that usually goes with ballet. Nowadays, the theater has almost abandoned charm. Actors want to be sweaty and real. Playwrights want to scratch their scabs in public. Very well, it is the mood of the times. But there is always another mood. Now, you remarked that we did not smile much in the performance. No jokes, really. A smile in such a show is half a cringe. Look at the magicians who appear in nightclubs. They are so anxious to be loved. To have everybody think, what a funny fellow, instead of what a brilliant fellow, what a mysterious fellow. That is the disease of all entertainment. Love me, pat my head. That is not what we want.
What do you want? To be feared?
To be wondered at. People want to marvel at something, and the whole spirit of our time is not to let them do it. What we offer is an entertainment in which a hungry part of the spirit is fed. But it won't work if we let ourselves be pawed and patronized and petted by the people who have marveled.
Excuse me, but you keep saying we do this and we will do that. Is this a royal we? If so, you may be getting into psychological trouble.
No. When I speak of we, I mean Liesl and myself. I am the magician. She is the autocrat of the company, as you shall discover.
And why is Liesl the autocrat of the company?
That also you shall discover.
I'm not at all sure of that. What do you want me for? My abilities as a magician are even less than they were when you were my audience in the Deptford Free Library.
Never mind. Liesl wants you.
Liesl cannot possibly know anything about me.
You underestimate yourself, Ramsay. Are you not the writer of 100 saints for travelers and forgotten saints of the Tyrol and Celtic saints of Britain and Europe? When Isengrim mentioned last night that he had seen you in the audience and that you had insisted on lending your handkerchief, I wanted to meet you at once. A distinguished hagiographer does not often come our way.
I know flattery when I hear it. But on the other hand, I don't often hear it. Let alone from the lips of one who understands the meaning of the word hagiographer. I must know more of this.
We want the benefit of your taste, Mr. Ramsay, and a particular kind of unusual assistance, for which, of course, we expect to pay.
And what could this unusual assistance be?
Every magician has an autobiography, which is sold in the theater and elsewhere. Most of them are dreadful things, and all of them are the work of another hand. Do you say ghost-written? We want one that will be congruous with the entertainment we offer. It must be very good, yet popular, persuasive, and written with style. And that is where you come in, dear Ramsay.
If you want me to write it over my own name, it's out of the question.
No, not at all. It is important that it appear to be an autobiography. We ask you to be the ghost. And in case such a proposal is insulting to such a very good writer, we offer a substantial fee. $3,500 is not bad. I've made inquiries.
Not good either. Give me that and a half share in the royalties and I might consider it.
Oh, there's the old grasping Ramsay blood.
Well, consider what you ask. The book would have to be fiction. I presume you don't think the world will swallow a courtier of polished manner if he's shown to be the son of a Baptist parson in rural Canada. The autobiography, like the personality, will have to be handmade. Distinguished works of imagination are not simply thrown together.
But you will not be hard on us. You see, not any writer will do. But you, who have written so persuasively about the saints, slipping under the guard of the skeptic with a candor that is brilliantly disingenuous, treating marvels with the seriousness of fact, you are just the man for us. We can pay, and we will pay, though we cannot pay a foolish price. But I think you are too much an old friend of magic to say no.
At 50, adventures don't come every day. For the first few days, it was flattering to sit in the stalls in the empty theater with Liesl while Isengrim rehearsed. My opinion was sought and given.
I suggest that you cut out the escape act entirely. Essentially, it's a physical trick, not a feat of magic. There's no romance about being stuck in a milk can and getting out again.
I heartily agree. And we could fill the gap with the brazen head of Friar Bacon.
Oh, Liesl, not that again.
Liesl's right. It's exactly the right kind of act for the show.
No one has ever heard of Friar Bacon.
Then you can tell them about him. A priest magician at his brazen head that foretold the future and knew the past. They'll eat it up. I'll write the speech for you.
We worked very hard on the brazen head, which was no more than a very good thought-reading act dressed in a new guise. The head was levitated by Isengrim and floated in the middle of the stage. As its finale, it gave messages to three members of the audience, chosen apparently at random, relating to their personal affairs.
I don't like it. It's too dangerous.
These random messages relied on the work of the company manager, a pickpocket of rare gifts. Sometimes he found invaluable letters in the coats of distinguished visitors when he took them to his office. But more often than not, it was straight dipping and potentially dangerous.
People are going to be afraid to come to the theater because of what might be said to them.
Nonsense. They'll come to hear what is said about other people.
It was Liesel's job to speak for the brazen head. She had an uncanny facility for rapidly interpreting a letter or an engagement book and composing a message, spicy without being positively libelous, that would have done credit to the Oracle at Delphi. The act was an instant success. At the first performance, a message given to a beautiful lady caused a duel to be fought between a well-known Mexican lawyer and a dentist who fancied himself as a Don Juan. Nothing could have been better publicity.
Now, tell me, Ramsay, what splendid lies are you concocting to turn Paul Dempster into Isengrim the Great?
Liesel, I don't know what's happening to me.
What do you mean?
At my time of life, I've suddenly become a liar and a braggart and even a lecher. Yesterday, I found myself slapping Faustina on the behind.
Ah, yes?
And when she protested, I winked.
A familiar experience for Faustina.
And worse than that, much worse, I have become a dangerously indiscreet talker.
Aha!
You're a woman who knows how to draw out confidences, and I told you things yesterday that I've never told a soul before. Please promise me that you'll never tell anyone.
No, Ramsay, I won't promise anything of the sort. You're too old a man to believe in secrets. There really is no such thing as a secret. Everybody likes to tell, and everybody does tell. If they don't, they grow very queer indeed. They pay a high price for their secrecy. You have paid such a price, and you look like a man full of secrets. Grim-mouthed and buttoned-up and hard-eyed and cruel, because you are cruel to yourself. It's done you good to tell what you know. You look much more human already. A little shaky this morning because you're so unused to being without the pressure of all your secrets, but you'll feel better quite soon.
Please, Liesel. They're not my secrets.
If a temperamental secret keeper like you cannot hold in what he knows, how can you expect it of anyone you despise as you despise me?
But that's not so.
Oh, yes, you do despise me. You despise almost everybody except Paul's mother. No wonder she seems like a saint to you. You have made her carry the affection you should have spread among 50 people.
What?
Don't look at me with that tragic face. You should thank me. At 50 years old, you should be glad to know something of yourself. That horrid village and your hateful Scots family have made you a moral monster. Well, it's not too late for you to enjoy a few years of almost normal humanity. Do not try to work on me by making sad faces, Ramsay. You are a dear fellow, but a fool. Now, tell me, how are you going to get the infant Magnus Isengrim out of that dreadful Canada and into a country where big spiritual adventures are possible?
If the breakdown of character that made me a chatterbox was hard to bear, it was a triviality beside the tortures of my love for the beautiful Faustina. Yes, it became a disease with me. I hung about the theater to see her come and go. I lurked in the wings to watch her very rapid changes because it was an instant when she was almost naked. I lay awake nights calling up her image before my imagination. Somebody, I suppose it was Liesel, told her I knew a lot about saints.
Good evening, Saint Ramsay.
Saint Dunstan.
I don't know Saint Dunstan. Was he a bad old saint who peeps? Huh? Oh, shame on you, Saint Dunstan.
Ah. I was in a melting ecstasy of delight and despair. She'd spoken to me. She knew I watched her and probably guessed that I loved her and longed for her. St. Dunstan, what about that? And bad old Saint. Oh, she thought me old. So I was. I was 50. But she had spoken and had shown awareness of my passion for her. But did it mean anything? I found out the next day. I was in the theater about 5 o'clock in the afternoon and chanced to go down the corridor on which the star's dressing room lay. The door was open, and I saw Faustina naked in the arms of Liesel, who held her close. I have never known such a collapse of the spirit, even in the worst of the war. And this time, there was no little Madonna to offer me courage or ease me into oblivion.